Welcome. My name is Winsome Waite, and I'm Senior Director of Policy to Practice here at the Alliance for Excellent Education. Thank you for joining us to hear from this informative panel on the OECD Test for Schools. Developed by the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD's Test for Schools is a school-level test based on the Program for International Student Assessment, or PISA. School leaders who give the assessment receive an integrated, information-rich report that identifies student performance and provides information about factors such as motivation and confidence. The Test for Schools functions like an index of factors that matter for student success and allows educators to develop a roadmap for continuous change and improve student achievement. Today's webinar highlights the Alliance's new report, the OECD Test for Schools, how three school systems are improving student achievement. We have with us the author of the report and two school leaders who use the Test for Schools to monitor student academic outcomes and inform teaching practice to meet student learning needs. But before we get to the report and to them, a few details. Please join the conversation via Twitter using the hashtag OECDPISA. You can also ask questions using that hashtag or via the box below this video window. Today's event will be archived at allfored.org webinars, and please visit us at pisaday.org for information on future PISA-related events and the Alliance. To find out more about the Global Network, please visit the link below or globalnetwork.americaachieves.org. And about the OECD Test for Schools, go to nwea.org/OECD. Lastly, thank you to the Kern Family Foundation for its support of the Alliance's work around PISA and the OECD Test for Schools. Now, let me introduce our guests. To my right is the author of the report, Dr. Ashley Berner. Ashley is Deputy Director of the Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy and Assistant Professor of Education at Hopkins. Ashley has written extensively on the relationship between educational structure and state funding in democratic nations, religious education and citizenship formation, and teacher preparation in different national contexts. This past November, Palgrave Macmillan published Ashley's book on pluralism and American public education, No One Way to School. Thanks for being here, Ashley, and for your time working on this brief. We also have with us today Dr. Clem Okuma, principal of University Academy, a K-12 charter school in Kansas City, Missouri. Under Clem's 11 years of leadership, the upper school has been recognized as a high-achieving school by the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, and for 4 years in a row, U.S. News and World Report has ranked it among the top performing high schools in the nation. In 2014, Clem was recognized by the Missouri Public Charter School Association as School Leader of the Year. So glad you're here with us, Clem. Lastly, it's great to have Dr. Randy Willis with us. Randy has served as a superintendent of Granger Independent School District, a small rural district in Central Texas since 2012. And has more than 22 years of experience in public education. During his time at Granger, the Texas Rural Education Association awarded Randy their Distinguished Service Award for outstanding contributions to rural school children and rural communities in Texas. A year later, Granger ISD was awarded School Board of the Year by the same group. We're also glad you're here, Randy. And I know you're not far from your alma mater, George Washington University, right here in D.C. Now, before we get to our discussion, Ashley, I know you have a presentation to share with us. We want to learn about the ideas from the report, ideas about the school and districts that are highlighted in it, and the important work that's being done by leaders like Clem and Randy. So, Ashley, over to you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be with these leaders with whom I've had a chance to speak, although not meet until today. So as Winsome said, I do work on democratic education around the world and comparing the structures and funding and content of those different systems. So I have a particular interest in PISA and in how the PISA plays out in our country. What is the PISA? It was established by the OECD to assess reading, math, and science around the world every 3 years. Now, of particular importance is the accompaniment of the 30-minute student survey that the PISA administers, which enables the organization and the countries to analyze the student demographics, to compare school funding levels, and to actually analyze the nexus between excellence and equity. And why is PISA important? It shows many different nations where they stand in the global economy. As we know, our world is much more connected economically and socially than ever before. The United States, it's fair to say, has had mediocre results historically in the aggregate. Our math scores are slightly below the OECD average. Our science and reading scores are slightly above the OECD average in the aggregate. But also, the OECD has tested adult skill level and well-being among their member nations, and they have found a correlation between PISA scores and adult performance and the adult well-being. So it's important for those non-academic reasons as well. Now, PISA does not provide state-level or school-level information. It's country-level information, with the exception of Massachusetts, which oversamples its students and thus has a state-level report. But how do schools and districts think about the effects of PISA and how their students manage in a global economy? And that takes us to the OECD test for schools, which is administered every year in each of the three subjects, as is the student survey. And what do these schools receive for it? They receive an information-rich report that integrates the student survey and the academic results. Now, just to give you a sense of how rich these questions are, this is an example from the PISA 2015 science exam. These are not bubble questions that fill in the blanks. The students have to take, and this is the example here, running in hot water. There's a description, and then I can't show you the interactions, but at least in the computer adaptive models, the students have to respond to the data and fill in all kinds of information. So it requires not merely a formula and understanding the formula, but how to integrate new information into larger concepts. This is the cover of a sample school report, which each of our leaders receives, and it tells them where their students stand against other schools in the United States that take the OECD, against the United States' PISA exams, and then also against international results, which is a benchmark of sorts. Also, and this is probably my favorite part, is the granular details that come through in the school reports. The questions that are asked in the student survey and some of the leaders' surveys enable the OECD to figure out what's behind the questions. How do your students feel about science? What's their motivation level in math? How do they engage with reading? And this is, I don't know of any other assessment that produces this kind of information. It's a lot of information. It's 150 pages worth of information. Have fun with that. What does it look like to administer this test on the ground? So we'll talk very briefly about the three different school systems and schools that we were able to profile in this report. The first is Gwinnett County in Georgia. Let me just say that the schools that were profiled and the school systems that were profiled are very different from one another in terms of their location, their region, their number of students, and so on. But they share a fierce commitment to excellence. So Gwinnett County Public Schools is the largest district in Georgia. There are 21 high schools and 55,000 students. Gwinnett County has scaled up their use of the OECD PISA test. They started with a few schools and are now, I think, all schools, all the high schools in the county, in the district, take the assessment. 69% students of color and 48% of the students in Gwinnett qualify for free or reduced price lunch. Granger Independent School District in Texas is of a different, it's a different animal. It's one of the smallest districts in Texas. 421 students and 144 in the high school. This is a true K through 12 school system, or I should say a K through 12 school. 4% African American, 41% Latino, and 54% white. About just under 60% or 57% qualify for free or reduced price lunch. University Academy in Kansas City, Missouri is a charter school. It's a K through 12 college preparatory school, and it was fascinating for me to learn about how their students are supported all the way through college. 323 students in the high school, 99% students of color, and 67% of the students at University Academy qualify for free or reduced price lunch. Now, I think it's important to note that all of these school systems that are profiled do have more than 50% that qualify for free or reduced price lunch, or almost 50%. And sometimes in this country, we think that low-income students simply can't perform at the high levels that the PISA or the International Baccalaureate. And I think quite the opposite is true, as all of these school leaders believe and act upon. So once they've administered the assessments and gathered gotten the school reports back, what happens then? And this is where I would submit the real magic begins. These are just a few things that have resulted from these three school systems, and we do highlight them in the report itself. But first of all, the instructional practices have been changed to prepare students not for the test, but for the kinds of questions and the integrative approach that the test promotes. So Colin Martin from Gwinnett County said, quote, "The OECD test for schools encourages the habit of not only understanding, but also applying academic concepts to real world scenarios." And I think that's true for all of the leaders here. And for Randy Willis and Granger, the OECD report even influenced the choice of the curriculum. And I'm quoting from him, "The OECD school reports have given our teachers a vision that deep learning should be relevant, hands-on, and fun." And Randy related the way in which they went through their curriculum adoption process and ended up choosing a slightly more expensive science curriculum that had more hands-on projects ready-made to make the teacher's engagement with the students even more manageable. The focus on student engagement is very interesting. The questions that are asked in the student survey pick up on how the students feel about their teachers, what their perception is of the climate in the schools, and from all accounts, it really has helped teachers to strengthen their relationships with the students and the kinds of questions that they ask and the responses that they elicit from their students. So how does this change the long-term trajectories of these schools and of these students? I think all of the leaders profiled here would say what they hope for is not just the next test, but changing the DNA of the schools and pushing these practices down into their classrooms and influencing the middle school practices as well and preparing students for the future. This is my favorite quotation from the report. Unless you have a world-class measure, you don't know if you have a world-class system.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Ashley. And let me start with a question for you that was very informative. My first question goes straight to you. What surprised you the most as you were going through writing this report?
Besides the joy of working on this subject, I think I was surprised and overwhelmed by the tenacity of the school leaders. And let me just give one example of this. Teachers already have quite a heavy lift when they're preparing students for assessments and evaluations and all of this. And all of the leaders did crosswalks with between the PISA questions and the PISA type questions and the state standards to give the teachers more security and knowing that this is not detracting from their work, it's adding to their work, contributing to their work. And this doing crosswalks is not for the faint of heart. It was very impressive, and I was really stunned by that.
Thank you. And let me ask the school leaders for their reaction to Ashley's presentation. Might we start with you, Randy, and then we'll go to Clem.
Thank you. Just one quick correction. I'd like to be Dr. Willis. It's just Randy Willis. So I want to make sure it's in pursuit of the doctor, but I haven't quite completed it yet. So don't want to mislead our audience.
Our audience. Yeah, thank you, Randy.
Like in the age of testing, it's just it's nice to get multiple assessments so that we can take a look at learning from different directions. Mm-hmm. And this particular test gives us that information. It allows us to supplement what we're doing with the state and give a different eye on what we do. And I think it's very valuable with teachers other than just trying to perform to their state standards. So we find it valuable from that perspective. And the report really helps us a lot.
Thank you.
Well, my sense is that the OECD test in our thinking and in looking at it and discussing it with the teachers goes way deeper. So that if a student can answer an OECD question, we know for a fact that they're going to be able to handle the state assessments because it doesn't come to you at the level of recall. It asks you to apply something, to engage in some higher order thinking. And the influence of this for us has been teachers are starting to change the nature of questions that they have. At our school, every day starts with a do now. It could be a short question on the board when the kids come in while the teacher takes attendance. And so by simply using OECD-type questions like that, mm-hmm. kids are starting to understand that school isn't just a game where they give you a piece of paper and you bubble in answers. It's really an activity that asks you to engage deeply and to think deeply and therefore to give fulsome answers. So it's changed how we're doing things.
Thank you. So I'm going to turn it back to you, Ashley. You're a leader in school reform efforts. How do you see this test for schools playing into the larger context of school reform? Hmm.
So when a democratic school system reforms, it typically takes one of three forms: funding, a reform in funding, a reform in structure, a reform in content. It's very rare that a school system does all three simultaneously. Alberta, Canada did so in the 1990s with reforming the funding, the structure, and the content. This is a reform, I think, focused primarily on the content. And what we know about schooling is we know that what happens in the classroom is paramount. The interactions between the teachers and the students and the quality of the instructional materials that they use and the back and forth that they have with the students. And I think what's so impressive and important about this work is the OECD assessment is not merely an assessment. It's pushing and elevating the content of the classroom. And that's where I would put it in the content reform. You all,
any reactions to that, Clem or Andy?
Yeah, my sense is that's exactly right. But oftentimes we think that if you mess with content, you haven't touched the structure. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, after you mess with the content, it basically forces you to change the structure. Because if the structure doesn't change at all, nothing changes. Mm-hmm. So for instance, at my school, we use a protocol that we developed together called Mastery Learning. Every quarter, in every subject, the student knows that they're going to face a mastery test. And that mastery test is not really meant to be a gotcha. You're going to have three opportunities. But if you take all three opportunities, your score is going to be low because it's got to be averaged out. And so that's a structural change we had in place that took advantage of the content-driven, content-driven changes that the OECD dictated. The other reason why we're starting to move into middle school, which is a structural thing, is when you think about it, the test tests 15-year-olds. And I only have them in the high school for a semester before they take the test. So part of that preparation has to happen in middle school, or we're going to be forever chasing our tail. So that discussion is ongoing at my school.
That's fabulous, fabulous comment. So back to the leaders, school leaders again, both Clem and Randy. In this environment where many feel there's over-testing, too many tests, how did you possibly convince your school communities to take the test for schools?
Well, it's a great question, and it's a question that many of my fellow superintendents in Texas ask me when I bring this up. And in Texas, we have 22 state exams that's end of the year, they're summative. And from those exams, our accountability system is based off of. And we don't get a lot of diagnostic information back that can help drive our instruction. It's left for districts to take the answers and figure out where we're weak and strong at. On the other hand, the OECD test for schools gives me a 150-page report, very rich in data that we can use and begin to break down and drive some instructional practices in a different light than our state standards. And then give you another perspective in how multiple assessments are so valuable. In our state assessments, my eighth grade students historically about 50% passing and failing on our science tests. But a year later, when they take the OECD test, they're at or above world levels. So having multiple assessments gives you a good leader at the campus an opportunity to make an impact in the classroom, but it gives a district leader an opportunity to talk with their board, their parents, their community about how well the school is doing among their world peers. And in my opinion, who wouldn't want to use the test for something like that?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. For us, you know, Missouri has a lesser number of tests that, you know, students have to, sophomores take a test in mathematics and English, juniors take a test in the ACT, and seniors are sort of exempt, you know, because by the time they get there, they're working on getting to college. But the necessity of this was immediately apparent to the teachers because I call it, we appeal to their self-interest. Who wouldn't want to, in Randy's terms here, compare themselves to other top countries in the world? And so once we got through that hurdle, they found that it was something that's going to happen once a year, that it's a test of the flow of the river, the state of the river. Are our kids learning anything, and is it making a difference? So, and the result was the fact that the report is so granular was something that also has been useful, especially the survey that the students have to do. How they feel about their school, their teachers, what they're learning, somehow rewards the teachers because that's why they do what they do. They want to make sure that their kids are feeling that what they stand up and deliver every day has value, or that it'll help them with college at the next level, whatever they choose to do. In our case, it's college.
And I think I'm going to pick up on that question, a question I have on the use of the reports, Clem, right here, because you mentioned it. So I'm going to ask both of you, you and Randy again, can you expound a bit more on how those reports help you? How do you use the reports from the test for schools? You know, variety of ways, and you started getting into it, so we'd love to hear more.
Well, you know, if I might continue here, and then I'll let Randy chime in. Essentially, the report gets there about June or July, if I'm recalling correctly. And so immediately I start getting into it. I pull out what's great. I pull out what's not so great. And so when teachers show up in August in our first professional development meetings or school-wide meetings, I put that in front of them. In fact, something wonderful happened this past fall. I was taking some time getting to it because there are other things that impinge upon your time. And teachers were actually asking for it. It turns out that the teachers also want to know. They want to know what the kids think. They want to see how they did. They want to know what we're doing better. And they want to know where the challenges still remain. The idea of reaching out to middle school actually came from an English teacher. You know, and so that's the kind of stuff. You got to let them see what it says, and then changes happen. Students also want to know how they did.
Absolutely. Randy. So, Randy, a specific quote, actually, from Ashley's PowerPoint, where you said that the OECD school reports have given our teachers a vision that deep learning should be relevant and hands-on and fun.
One of the things that the report, and I like the slide, that's my favorite slide in the whole report that Ashley put up, is when we begin to look at how our students read. And what one of the first thing that I got from the report and shared with our teachers is that our kids are comprehending what they read very well, because a large percentage of them were in the deep and wide area. And I thought that was significant for me as a school leader, to know that our teachers, it really reinforced our teachers were doing a very good job in reading, because they were outscoring our peers in the U.S. And so we broke down, I pulled out the math and English and science, and I really gave it to our junior high staff. We kind of started with there exactly with what Clem had to say. You've got to look at those 3 or 4 years prior to, because our ninth grade teachers only have them for about 6 months. So we just handed the report to them and say, here's some ideas and some best practices that are happening. And then we allow the practitioner to take that and then phase it in with their lesson plans with their state standards. So it just gives them another piece of material to look at as they're planning on how to engage the students and how to inspire the students. But primarily, I think it's key to work on that 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level.
Fabulous. Thank you, Randy. So back to you, Ashley. This assessment is a tool to change practice at the school, at the district level. Can you talk a bit about how this tool can change practice, but a specific twist on the leadership that's required for that?
Right. So we know from research on all different kinds of schools, whether we're talking about private schools, charter schools, traditional district schools, that two factors that matter greatly for student success are a challenging academic curriculum and a strong school culture. And a strong school culture that informs everything the school does. And both of those really require strong leadership. And I think what we see in these case studies is the use of this very powerful mechanism to draw the school community or the district even into a common conversation and to elevate the content and the instructional quality. So I think we have here a very nice match between all the different pieces that matter for student success.
That's fabulous. Any reactions to that, gentlemen?
I think that's pretty much the case. The what I like about this and what I'm hoping happens is that other schools step forward and start doing some of these things, because it, you know, it doesn't cost that much more, and yet what you learn from it helps you do better in the next round. And I certainly also hope that the state agencies look a little bit harder at analyzing how students do and giving those results back to, if PISA can give me over 100 pages of report, the state should be able to also do the same with whatever it is they're saying students have to do. It's not just a question, and I see this happening. It's a minor frustration for me that standards get set, and then the exam gets done, and everybody says, you didn't do this, but there's no supporting document that allows you to do better see what you might look into a little bit more as you prepare kids. I don't know what the situation is in Texas. It's certainly,
I don't get that. We do have a different situation. Yeah. One of the things that on Ashley's comment that's important, that the that our teachers are able to go to the convening once a year. And when you take a small rural school like mine, and we're able to send two or three teachers to Washington and talk to other practitioners across the country and the world, they come back so excited when they find out some of their problems are not any different in Spain or in New York or Wisconsin, and they come back very inspired to take what they learn at the World Convenings that the American Chiefs puts on with us and share those best practices. And so that Global Learning Network is another piece of this that's really important, and for any school, but in particular for small rural schools, so they can see what other schools are doing, you know, even in a large setting to even a small city as ours.
Fabulous. Yeah. Thank you. So both Clem and Randy again. The report discusses some next steps that you both plan to take. Would you mind elaborating on those for our audience?
Yes, to me the report is really gives you a turnkey operations in terms of what you need to do coming back to your teachers. You could look at what students believe, and it's not debatable. You don't have to guess at it. It's right there. It doesn't matter, you know, like one of my teachers likes to do. Well, I taught them that. They just don't remember that I taught it. Well, if they remember it, they didn't tell me that. They didn't tell the survey questions that. And so it's your job to be a little bit more obvious as you're doing those things. On the other hand, the math teacher who got high marks for instrumental motivation, the kids remember her saying she used to be an architect, is now a math teacher, is able to maybe link what they're studying to what they will be studying later on in terms of a career. So the report gives you all kinds of useful things like that if people are able to are willing to step up and consider changing their practice.
I don't think the report is something for quick analysis. It's kind of like drink. They get so much information there. It's like kind of drinking water from a fire hose, and it's something that takes a lot of time to review, and then review, and then review. So trying to break it down in pieces and allow the teachers to look at it, allow the staff to look at it, it takes a lot of time and investment. But as you get these different ideas, you're able to expand on it. And so again, we'd already begin working with our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade teachers, and I think that's where the critical work is. And we're seeing, we have good teachers in our junior high. Some of our test scores are really good in our junior high there at Granger, and really, and this exam or this assessment kind of gives them a little more tool to reinforce what they're doing in relation with their state standards.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous, thank you. So I'll read this question. It's from an online viewer in Greenwood, Mississippi. How are school districts chosen to participate in the OECD test for schools? Are there district requirements to qualify or to be eligible for this assessment? And it goes to the entire panel.
As far as I know, there's not really any requirements. It's just a willingness to put forth and administer it. You know, it's just you just have a willingness to do it, and then contact the test provider, NWEA. They'll work with you to get your protocols back and forth with the students that will be tested, and then it's just a matter of paying for it. It's not a qualification. It's not a pre-qualification. It's really a vision on how you want to add different assessment tools to what you already do.
Okay.
In my case, I was invited by individuals at the Global Learning Network. I think it actually started with the National Alliance for Charter Schools. And they said, hey, we got a grant here, and your school's stuck out there. Would you want to try this? And I was willing to do it. My superintendent, frankly, I still tease him about it, says, you don't need that. Teachers aren't going to want to do it. Well, like I shared with you, the teachers were willing to do it because the appeal was that you're going to be a world-class you're going to be comparing yourself to a world class of students and other schools. So, you know, it. I think it was like $3,000. It was a cost of it. It does cost money, whether you get the cost granted out or not. I've just given you what my story is, but it's you've heard, I hope, from what we've been saying so far, that the results you get from it are so useful and end up being transformational that I think it's well worth the amount.
I think the original cost on the paper was approximately $12,000, but in NWEA, cut that in half when they took it over and took it to digital format. So it's not quite as expensive as it was originally. Mm-hmm. But like Clem said, that you know, we, especially for budgets like mine, we were able to get some grants that allow us to get started into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. Ashley, any thoughts on that?
Well, perhaps we should also address the sampling. There are, 85 students per school that need to take it? And I suppose part of your job is to ensure that those students randomly selected are representative of the school community.
Yeah, for me, you know, my community is my community. We know who we are. And essentially what I had to do was to send... have the technology guy send the student data, usually date of birth and that kind of stuff, and they're selected enough to be representative. So it's not quite as simple as 85. It's not always 85. I don't have 85.
Neither do I.
freshmen. But they take the number you send them and do some modeling that allows them to pull out representative.
And we don't really do that part of it. The test provider does that. Like you said, we send the data to them, and then they do the actual sampling part of it.
So it's not doesn't provide student-level data.
No.
So the students, or the teachers won't look at the results and think, well, that student said this about me.
Yes.
It's the aggregate of the school.
My teachers are a little bit disappointed because when they looked at the students taking it, and your two and three top, you know, in a small school like mine, you know, the top two or three that are out there say, oh, that's not fair. And then, you know, that's something that, but that's the part of the sampling process and why it works.
Yeah. And I think it's a good thing that students aren't singled out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it allows them to be honest and fulsome in their responses. But then the information you got, because of the detail of it, allows you to begin working with it. Randy's exactly right. You couldn't read it and say, here's what we're going to do. What we've done is picked what we did really well in and try to enhance it. And then look at, I remember the first year I said, boy, we have nobody in the advanced scores for science. This is really embarrassing, you know. And unbeknownst to me, everybody was hearing that, students and teachers, and so we went to almost 10% the second year. It's not still what we want, but we're getting there. And that's what can happen as you talk about what your results are.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This question comes to us from a viewer in Puerto Rico. Are students' psychosocial development and the ability to cope with challenges taken into account when developing and administering this test?
For us, to answer the question, it absolutely does that. When you look at the test questions, the questions aren't really trying to answer a standard, but they test the students' knowledge to apply to a novel situation. So they really have to be able to think through the question and then come up with how well they understand it. I think Ashley's example was a really good question. As an administrator, and what I would like to stay out to our state administrators across in our state agency, is that it's not just an ABC fill in the bubble test. This test gives them multiple opportunities to answer it multiple ways, and they're also giving partial credit. And that's how testing should be. Mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity to look at that, and they don't just have to bubble something in. They have to think, and so it really assesses how well they do meet individual challenges in real world. And that's what I like about the exam.
And I would say because the test isn't given to 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds, or 17-year-olds. They pick 15, people who were born within a certain age range, what that, or date, I should say. So what that achieves for you is that you kind of know that there's an assumption they've finished sixth grade, they've finished seventh grade, they've finished eighth grade. And so if I were somebody looking at it, that is standardized. That meets a whole range of psychosocial parameters. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have that problem. Most of our kids who were selected to do it did it well. And complied with what they needed to do, especially the online version. That was so much easier, although it was hard to administer at the same time. For students, it was so much easier.
That's great. Thank you. So both of you mentioned the Global Learning Network.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to explain to our audience what that organization is?
I'm fortunate enough to have started this 4 years ago and was asked to be on the Leadership Council. So there was 12 leaders that looked at this and began to meet on a quarterly basis to discuss how to use this to our peers. And Clem had alluded something a little bit earlier with the fact trying to share this with our local areas. In Texas, our Dallas School District and Houston School District have been using this test, and then Little Granger. And I've been trying to work with my superintendents in my region to begin to look at this, and I think Hutto ISD is going to start this year, to be able to give our teachers additional people to work with within our state, where we can have some cadres to share our results and their best practices. And then there's a lot of links and things with the Global Learning Network that can that we can access worldwide. As I said, when we went to the World Convening, my teachers were so enthralled to visit with some of the practices that were happening in England, in Canada, in Spain, in Japan, and they're at a table discussing this. That's you can't provide that any other way. And so we really appreciate that opportunity of what America Achieves and the Global Learning Networks has done for us to give us that exposure and then to try to get more of our peers to join in so we can share best practices with each other.
And I like to echo that as well. For me, the value of the convening, and this was my first year of doing it, my second year of it, of my students taking the OECD PISA, the value of what the global network is, learning network for me is that you have colleagues you can contact. Mm-hmm. And strange things that happen in education is somebody could be next door doing something, but they're not sharing it. You don't know about That's it. Right. You think you're all alone. So I came down here to Washington, D.C. Last fall and ran into a bunch of people from Olathe, Kansas, and Blue Valley, you know, mm-hmm. Kansas City mm-hmm. schools that have been in this. So it was nice to meet. It is also, I got from it the idea that I ought to contact some of the other charter schools, because charter schools get kind of pushed aside from time to time. And so any opportunity to pull together to convince our colleagues, which is a truth that we're still part of the public school choices, is a good thing. And mm-hmm. I think the Global Learning Network has done a good job of that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you.
Should add that even the school report mm-hmm. makes mention of what's happening in other countries. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if you read the school report, even the sample report that's on the OECD Test for Schools website, they will say, if this is an issue that's come up for your students, this is how teachers in Finland have dealt with a similar mm-hmm. issue. It's fascinating. Yeah. It is really an ongoing, yeah. continuous learning community.
Yeah. Yeah, to give you a specific example, when one of my principals went with me 2 years ago, they were talking with a couple of other principals and found out the transition from fifth to sixth grade was the same problems we had at Granger that they were having in South Carolina and in Florida. And so he just came back just, you know, they're having that same issue. So that sharing, just like Clem had said, sharing this information with each other and know that you're not doing this alone, and then picking up just one piece of idea here and one idea there, it's not meant that you have to do everything, but you pick the pieces that are good for you and then build on it. Mm-hmm. So that network is very, very valuable.
Thank you. Wonderful. A question came in from Haley from Columbus, Ohio, actually. Ashley, maybe this is This may be for you, I don't know. It says, how are you statistically connecting this new assessment to PISA?
Well, this assessment is essentially the same as PISA, the same clusters of questions, the same style of questions as PISA. But so I think the scores are, in my view, at least in my understanding, analogous to mm-hmm. what you see with the PISA scores. It's simply that they come mm-hmm. more frequently mm-hmm. and they're done at a school level as opposed to the country level. So they give school and district leaders actionable data in a way that the national PISA simply can't do.
That's very helpful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Finally, let me read you a sentence from the end of the report. It says, simply put, higher levels of reading and math literacy correlate to healthier, better off, more socially mobile, and more socially active adults across their lifetimes. And so the question starts with Randy and Clem. And Ashley, you can chime in. What are you seeing? I know it's early in the process, but what are you seeing with regard to that statement? And or, what are you hoping to see?
I think from my perspective as a superintendent, and we're preparing students for jobs that haven't been created yet. When you look at 4, 5, 6 years down the road when these students graduate, there's so many new careers that are going to be out there. So we don't even know what the questions are, much less what the answers are going to be. So creating people that can, students that can be equipped to adjust and to think critically and to be able to take their knowledge and be able to apply it to multiple situations is what our aim and what we hope to be able to do. For me personally, I think that I have a high confidence level that the students that are coming out today are very well prepared. They have a great skill set, and we're preparing them to confidently address the complex issues that we see in our society. I think that their lives will be better. I think that they will make a better community and a better state and a better country as a result of being a lot more confident that they have the skills to tackle this when they come out. So I have a lot of hopes. And this is just, as I said earlier, gives us another multiple measure in our toolbox to help that process with our students and grow.
Yeah, and I second a lot of those sentiments, but I want to add a simple thing that it seems simple, but it's really has made a difference. No student at university, academy, upper school any longer thinks they're just in Kansas City. And so what this test has done for them is that I said to them, you're going to be competing with 15-year-olds across the world. Are you going to let them beat you? and that's my motivational talk to them, and that's part of what the conversation throughout our school has been. I even have 16-year-old sophomores now saying, well, when are we going to do that again? That was fun. How did I do? Who got that's better? Great, yeah. And so the idea of it is that you back up and you say, you're not just working in this little place. You might actually end up there. You might end up living in London and, in Germany or wherever the spirit moves you. The idea is that when you get there, you want to be able to function effectively.
Wonderful. Well, we have run out of time. This has been a really thoughtful conversation and discussion. I want to thank our panelists today, Ashley Berner, Clem Okoma, and Randy Willis. Great to have all of you here today. Please keep in mind that today's event will be archived at allfored.org webinars. Be sure to visit us at pisaday.org for information on future events on PISA and on the Alliance. To learn more about the Global Learning Network, visit the Global Learning Network.americaachieves.org. And to learn more about the test for schools, go to nwea.org/OECD. And once again, we want to thank the Kern Family Foundation for its generous support for the Alliance's work around the OECD test for schools. I'm Winsome Wade for the Alliance for Excellent Education. Thanks for joining us today.